better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Coaching hires with the football program. First off, Jeff Long with Brett Bielema. Now with Chad Morris, which, by the way, Hunter Yurecek did not officially make the hire of Chad Morris. So who would you say hired Chad Morris? Maybe the board trustees?
The board.
Okay. I mean, that's
what I'd say. I mean, I think Julie Cromer Peoples carried out their desires, but the board is the one that hired this. Ruskin was talking about this on Monday, and he's right. The board skips steps. You need to hire an AD and let an AD hire the coach. That's not the way it went with Chad Morris. And I think he's right about you clearly skip steps, but they thought they had Gus Malzahn in their hip pocket.
Yep.
And got played on that deal. So, no, I think the board, if you're going to hold anyone responsible for this situation and how it all unfolded, I think it's got to be the board of trustees and your chancellor.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tommy, but at least the story was that with the board of trustees, one of the reasons they made the hire is because they didn't get Gus, but Gus had recommended Chad Morris to them, and they had taken his recommendation, which I always think it's a bad move that if you're ever taking the recommendation of a coach that's in the division that you're trying to compete against.
Yeah, and they're close friends. I don't think I know that for a fact. I mean, those guys talk on a regular basis. They've been friends for a long time, so his recommendation wasn't to screw Arkansas over. Hey, let me give you this guy, and that'll hurt you.
I don't know.
I don't believe that.
Why wouldn't you?
No.
You wouldn't?
No, I think his recommendation was to help his friend.
Oh. Well, maybe so, but couldn't it have been a little go hand in hand, knowing that, hey, your friend's a good guy, but he's not that good of a coach. Could have been that, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. I love conspiracies, though.
Remember when you ended up with Susie Gardner as your women's basketball coach? On whose recommendation? Pat Summitt.
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Summitt, right? Well, yeah, of course Pat Summitt recommended her.
Yeah, that's the thing is, if I'm a coach and somebody's got, if I'm a coach at Arkansas and then somebody like Tennessee's coming to me and be like, hey, who would you want us to hire? I'm like, Willie Taggart, go get him, right? Yeah, I mean, fantastic coach, go and bring him in. I mean, I'd do that. I would totally do that. But the original point, though, of what the caller is just he was beefing with those coaching hires. And you got to admit, because he was bringing up how, you know, you just need to write a big old check and go get this coach that's going to – listen.
Sounds good when it's not your money.
Well, right. But also, here's what you got to remember, folks. Brett Bielema was a coach at the time that was a huge name get.
Yes.
I mean, I remember when he was hired. First off, I was shocked because he was a name that not really many people were throwing out there.
We were trying to figure out how to say his name.
Yeah. But when he did, I was like, whoa, they got a guy that won three straight Big Ten titles to come to Arkansas. Like, that's...
How many Rose Bowls?
Yeah, that's
and,
big
and
time.
It was at a time before football really changed. And it was right before it. But right after he got here, the offensive side of the ball really went through a complete revolution in the... In the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah.
Saban changed his offense. There were already a few programs that were running variations of the spread, and here comes this guy running pro style. It worked. That's why it kind of had the most success earlier in his tenure. And then when things changed, it fell apart. But, yeah, I mean, it just there was nothing wrong with the Brett Bielema hire at the time it was made.
No.
It was a good hire on paper.
On paper.
It didn't work out.
Yeah. Because, I mean, listen – If you see that type of resume and that guy's interested in coming to your program, you'd be stupid not to make that hire.
So now you got Chad Morris, who has no resume. I mean, what's the best thing on Chad Morris's resume at this point?
He was the Clemson offensive coordinator.
That's it. I mean, it's not SMU.
No. It wasn't his time at Tulsa.
Nope.
And as a high school head coach, yeah, he's really successful, but no one really cares about that. Yeah.
Didn't hire you to be a high school coach.
Yeah.
So, I mean... you had all the resume you wanted. That didn't work, so he went with a different direction as far as resume. And listen, Gus didn't have a ton of resume when he was hired at Arkansas as the OC. Then he went to Tulsa, then to Auburn, then to A-State for a head coaching job. I mean, and that's worked out. I know he's been on the hot seat, and he's got his critics and this and that. I think it's worked out all right for Gus Malzahn.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it just hasn't clicked yet for Chad Morris. I don't think the guy is... incapable of doing this job. He's got to get more players. He's got to get more talent. I think there's clearly reason to question whether this coaching staff is all cohesive and on the same page. And that's part of being the leader. I think it's he's still learning on the job what it takes to be the CEO of an SEC football program. It's a bigger job than I think we all realize, not just coaching X's and O's. If that was all there was to it, I think Chad Morris would probably have more success quickly. But there's a lot more to running a organization. And that's what you've got here with 100-plus people that you're responsible for, plus the players. I mean, you're talking about equipment managers and sports information people and social media people, recruiting people, assistant coaches. And now you've got layers of coaching with all these analysts that are on staff, and they all answer to you in one way, shape, or form. And that can be pretty daunting, and you've got to have certain organizational skills to handle all of that. And I think he's probably still learning a lot about that part of the job. I mean, I don't think this is just about getting a dry erase marker and getting on a board and drawing up plays. I don't think he has that. That's not the problem. It's getting all of it, getting your arms around all of it.
But see, to me, it's a problem if you're learning those things on the job.
Well, that's because you hired a head coach with no head coaching experience mm-hmm. at this level.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's a problem, and it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm just saying those are things at SMU you don't worry about. Those are things as OC at Clemson, not on your responsibility list. You become the head coach at an SEC program, and now you have all of these extra responsibilities that you've not dealt with before.
Yeah. But you're talking about some things, though, that you should know how to deal with, even if you weren't a coach of the SEC, that they're having problems with, like having your team ready to play.
I understand.
Those are things that it's like, that's junior high stuff. You got to have your team ready to play. And when you come out and you admit, my guys weren't ready. I didn't like them the pregame warm-up. They weren't prepared for this game, and they were too giddy. I didn't like that. I mean, that's stuff that doesn't even matter what level of coach you're at or in the SEC. That's just the fact of the matter. You have to have your team ready. And it's basic stuff like that. Let's go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline, 877-377-6963. Nelson is in Harrison. What's going on, Nelson?
Hey, guys. I just want to throw in my two cents. Everybody knows me. Everybody knows my stance with Mike Anderson and all that. And I'm telling you, all these Arkansas fans, how ignorant do you have to be to sit here and get on the phone and say, throw the money at this next guy, at this next guy. They're 0-1. These coaching experts are 0-1 with Mike Anderson. They said, get Mike Anderson in here. Throw Mike Anderson in here. He'll give us a national championship, no doubt about it. These guys, they get their emotions all wrapped up into it, and they're not seeing the bigger picture. Arkansas, it don't matter if you're Mike Anderson, Brett Bielema, if you're Gus Malzahn, you're starting out behind the A ball. I mean, you're just going through it, Arkansas. Because, like I said, back whenever everybody wanted to laugh at me and stuff, the university as a whole for the past 7 to 8 years has been just improperly ran. And I was trying to tell people that whenever I told them. I said, Mike Anderson is a microcosm of a piece of crap because that whole university has been a joke for 8 years. From the leadership at the top all the way down. Basically since Brewer's let Long take over. And I hope people can start seeing kind of what is going on. And as a fan base, the University of Arkansas is going to have to take its lumps over again. Did I like the loss to San Jose State? No, I didn't. But we're not where the fan base thinks we are as a university. We've been taken back light years. You know, so that's what I want to say.
Well, Nelson, the thing is, though, is, you know, are you saying that Arkansas and the fact that they lose to a team like San Jose State, that's just the lumps you're going to have to take as a Razorback fan? I mean,
I'm saying that, hey, okay, let me put it like this to you, okay? What have we done in the last 2 years that was bigger than coming back and beating Colorado State? What have we done?
Nothing.
That was that big in our kids' minds.
Scored 31 on Alabama.
Okay, we scored 31 on Alabama.
And lost. They
and
scored 65,
what?
But, you know.
We got beat by 30 still. So they couldn't tell. You know, these kids, they beat Colorado State. They got full of themselves. They thought,
hey,
you know what?
That was fool's gold, Nelson. That win was fool's gold.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying to you. If you'll listen for a minute, like I was telling you back then about the whole administration and everybody was laughing. Whenever I told you the whole university was being ran wrong, and everybody's like, oh, no, this is Nelson Hurst, and he's a dumbass. Oh. You know, I'm telling you right now, beating Colorado State was the biggest thing that these kids have done in their time at the university. They've got full of themselves on that. It was fool's gold. And then they went out and laid an egg against San Jose State because they thought, oh, man, well, you know, we got this. We got this. And now they're got, hopefully everything will come back into perspective for everybody, and they'll say, you know what, we haven't done nothing. But yes, beating Colorado State got them beat.
Listen, losing to San Jose State will humble you. And thanks for the call, Nelson. I mean, I think what you're saying is they've got to get humbled. I think they've been humbled. So I mean. Shouldn't be too high on yourself after a win off Colorado State anyway. But I agree, it's about leadership, Nelson. And I thought Jeff Long did a lot of good things during his time, but I think the leadership above him, there's some things that you could question over the last 10 or so years. We got so used to the iron fist and the control that Frank Broyles had. And it's just different. No one's going to have the control that Frank Broyles once had on this athletic department. Board members, chancellors, presidents, they feared Frank Broyles. They knew they couldn't win that battle publicly or privately either. It's just not that way, man. I mean, when you had a leader like Frank Broyles who was at the same school for 50 years, I mean, he had earned certain respect and power. You just don't have anyone with that kind of control and grip on the athletic department. And things have changed. I mean, when Jeff Long took over, it was, what, a $55 or $60 million athletic budget? And now you're well north of $100 million. I mean, times have changed.
I still don't know what Nelson was trying to say, though.
Well, he's talking about the leadership at the university level has really spoiled a lot of things in the athletic department. Has ruined some things.
Yeah, but listen, and I love Frank Broyles as much as anybody, but even Frank had his flaws of hires. He had some bad decisions,
Jack
too.
Jack Crow.
Well, yeah, Jack Crow. You had the fact that as how long his constant defense of Houston Nutt when people were wanting a change in that regard. You had the Stan Heath hire, the John Pelfrey hire. I mean, but there were issues.
Some of those hires were, even towards the end, he was starting to lose some of that grip and control, and things like Stan Heath were forced upon Frank Broyles. So I think Nelson's got a valid point that the university leadership at the highest levels has done some things and set some courses that are questionable and has led to where you're at with some of this stuff.
Yeah. But I guess I look at it from a different perspective because there's programs across the country with athletic directors or decision makers that make bad decisions all the time. It's a trial and error business. Nobody wants to hear that, but it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some higher, like, listen, when Frank Broyles hired Nolan Richardson, there's probably a lot of people that thought that there was no way that this would be a coach that would take him to winning a national championship. But no one thought that because all he had was a JUCO championship and an NIT championship. No one thought that probably.
But you were coming off of what ended up being a Hall of Fame coach with Eddie Sutton, who had taken your program to Final Four.
Yeah, but my point is that the leadership aspect of it all, listen, that they all want the same thing. They want to win, and they want to make money doing it. I mean, that's what the leadership wants. And if they don't get that, then they'll make a change. So I just don't know how much of, like, listen, the Jeff Long era and the way that he – that was an athletic director. Some of the decisions he made, I think, was pretty damning towards this program and has really set it back a long ways because of the culture change more than anything. But I don't think it's completely and totally undone to where it can never get back to that point.
Hey, Southern Tire Mart has all the tires you need and the most trusted tire brands, including the best-selling That's Toyo Tires. So if you're looking for a new set of tires heading into the fall of the year, Southern Tire Mart can help you with that. Plus, all of your automotive service needs, the best-in-class service for everything under the hood, including a daily oil change for just $24.95. Southern Tire Mart, Highway 271 and 540, or call ahead for a service appointment at 646-2674 for Southern Tire Mart.
Let's go back to the Cherokee Casino Hotline. David is in Oklahoma. What's going on, David?
Oh, not much. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a comment about, well, just two quick comments. One about Texas A&M.
Okay.
The Aggies have always believed that they were better than what they ever were. In the Big 12, they thought they were one of the elite. They consistently, with exceptions of one season, finished in the middle of the pack, fifth, sixth, you know, fourth sometimes, consistently in the middle of that. 1 year they won the Big 12. In the Southwest Conference, Arkansas won it, if I'm not mistaken, more times than Texas A&M won the Southwestern Conference. And once coming to the SEC, the first couple of years they looked really good. Ever since then, they've been in the middle of the pack. They're consistently in the middle of the pack. They're not the great echelon team they think they are. And I don't think it's that great of an upset if Arkansas beats them Saturday. Because the truth is, I don't think they're as good as they think they are. And then about Chad Morris. I said the day they hired him, I called one that showed you this morning one or the afternoon, and not that it makes me that smart, but I said they hired a loser. I just don't think the guy is that good. And I think he proved he's a loser by the excitement he got about how he beat Colorado State. When you beat somebody like Colorado State, you act like you're supposed to win that game. You don't act like it's the greatest thing ever, in my opinion. You act like you're supposed to win that game, and you go on to the next game, and then you don't go into the game against San Jose State all giddy and excited and thinking you got this game in the bag. And then you probably play different. You don't throw five interceptions, and you win the game. Come on, you take away any one of those five interceptions, they probably win the game. And that's just my opinion. You can tell me I'm wrong if you want. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think you're wrong at all.
I'd say I completely agree with you, my man.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for taking my call, and you guys have a good day.
A&M has had a decades-long tradition, David, of overestimating. They've got a self-awareness, a self-perception problem with that program. I mean, I thought when they joined the league, it was really going to rock the boat, more so in baseball than maybe the other two sports, because Texas is loaded with great high school baseball talent. There should be no reason Texas A&M shouldn't be running things in the SEC West for baseball.
Well, same thing in football.
Well, I mean, you still got Alabama and LSU and
Auburn.
I know,
but why can't A&M be that?
But in baseball, they ought to be able to really dominate. They haven't done anything. In basketball, same story. And, I mean, what noise have they made? I know they went to a couple Sweet 16s, but I mean, as far as in the league, they're not competing with the Kentuckys of the league or the Floridas or the Arkansas even. So, I mean, I can understand because of the difficulty of the SEC West why A&M hasn't been able to win a Western Division. And listen, Johnny Manziel, really, could there have been better timing to have a player like Manziel than when they joined the league? Really, you know, made a splash. They had a win over Alabama. But, you know, I can understand how the difficulty of coming into this league in this era with Saban doing the things he's done and not finding your way to Atlanta right away. Somehow Missouri did, A&M couldn't. That still boggles my mind.
One's in the East and one's in the West.
But it's the other sports that I just can't see why they haven't got on track.
Well, football to me, I'm not saying they should have won the West because let's be honest, there's only really been one team winning the West
right. Most
times, and it's been Alabama. So, but the thing is they haven't even been competitive in the SEC West as far as being one of those teams that has a chance to make the SEC West or compete against Bama. And that's what I'm saying is like they're not a program, though, in football that should be this average. They should not be that mediocre
that's my point. They have a self-perception problem, but they think they are Alabama
because they have all the amenities to do so.
Mm-hmm.
They have every reason to be Alabama. They have all the money in the world, as we know.
Well, I mean,
they have a fan base, they have facilities, they have, they're right there in the heart of recruiting and some of the hotbeds of Texas when it comes to football players. They also should have taken advantage of the fact that all the other big time schools in the state of Texas were down, like Texas and Texas Tech and Baylor and TCU. Well, and you know, you were in the SEC.
They've done less with more than anybody in the country.
Right. And that's my whole point, is that they should be a program in football that is competing in the SEC West.
I mean, I don't know if you call it arrogance to hire a coach and pay him $7.5 million. You do that because you can of your A&M. But then the absolute arrogance to go ahead and hand him the national championship plaque or whatever it was with the date to be filled in, that just shows you the lack of self-awareness around that whole program.
Mm-hmm. But hey, if Arkansas could pay Jimbo Fisher $7.5 million, I would have been all for it.
Arkansas could pay someone $7.5 million for the right coach.
Yeah.
Don't let them fool you. There's money up there.
Yeah. But no, but that's what I'm saying, is that I would have been all for it if they hired Jimbo Fisher at $7.5 million.
You know, some people don't believe that there was really an offer in that range to Gus, but I believe there was, you know, somewhere close to that. Maybe the numbers are off a little bit, but, you know, if Arkansas, for the right name, they could come up with that kind of money.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're already paying a guy that's 4-12, 3.5. What's another 3.5 to win?
Yeah.
And how much is it costing you to lose? But the problem is, as we're seeing with A&M, you pay someone $7.5 million, that doesn't guarantee you to win.
Yeah, see them and see Michigan deal. And Jimbo exactly. And Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you pay someone $7.5 million doesn't mean they're going to win.
Yeah.
So if it was that simple, a lot of schools would have lined up to buy wins.
Yeah. Well, so in most cases, and I think Nick Saban's the only exception to the rule, but in most cases, these teams who have always paid or overpaid for head coaches always had the failures to go along with it. I mean, even a place like Ohio State with Urban Meyer, they weren't paying him $7.5 million. They weren't to that point.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Wanted to switch gears a little bit as Eric Musselman, the Razorback basketball coach, met with the media yesterday as Razorback basketball practice is officially underway. And there's a lot of people excited, myself included, about the prospect of Arkansas basketball and what it could get back to and some of the things that Eric Musselman has been doing. But, you know, there are a few things that stood out, and if you want to check out the press conference in its entirety, be sure to head over to hitthatline.com and see all the things that he had to say. But, you know, the one thing that Arkansas basketball has been lacking for so long, and one of the things that ended up getting Mike Anderson in the end, was lack of recruiting. Are unable to not only recruit at a high level, but even to recruit in your own state, where a lot of big-time players were getting away from you, going to other schools in your own conference. And it was frustrating for Razorback fans to see that and have the success that they did at a different school. But it seems that Eric Musselman understands recruiting importance at a school like Arkansas.
You never know in recruiting, but we don't want to make a mistake. You know, the fortunate thing, I had like 4 years where I sat back and really got to study, and then 2 years as an assistant and another. So really, you had another 3 years as an assistant. And I thought that, you know, the one thing, and looking at rosters, when you make a mistake recruiting, it can really set you back. And so we're going to be as sure as we possibly can. Obviously, the younger a player is, the more upside, but yet also there's less body of work. But we have really, really been recruiting this class really hard. Having said that, in the 2020 class, we as a staff, we as a program, and the players were a year behind where other people were. And so we understand that. And I feel like our staff's made incredible strides with the 20 class. What happens in November, what happens the early signing period, the late signing period, have no idea where that goes.
Well, the thing is that by recruiting in any sport, especially when it comes to college basketball, it's vital. And it's always different, too, because It's not a sport like in football where you have amount of scholarships that you have, where you have to make sure all the positions are covered. I mean, you're talking about one or two or even three guys making the difference each year. Those are the only individuals that you really need to focus on and trying to get. So it's a little different of an animal. But all the
cons. There's less margin of error with 13 scholarships.
Correct. And that's why he was saying how careful that they have to be in these recruiting classes, because you know the difference that one player can make if you miss on him. And also what I gathered by that, and we know that when he was at Nevada that he was big on the transfer portal and getting transfers in, and how much of a difference that made. I think that that's still going to be a concept for him at Arkansas, because as we've seen with other teams, and besides, of course, the big blue bloods like a Kentucky or a Duke, but even in those cases you've seen them take in transfers because it's a little easier to go about it. It's a little easier to have the entire body work and to be able to understand if their body is ready, if they're mentally ready for the college basketball game. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to that, and it's not a negative anymore. So I'm sure he's going to continue to do that as well as doing high school recruiting.
To me, there's the difficulty because you only get to sign two or three players generally a year. I think he'll use the transfer portal to fill out his 13 more as much as he will the high school trail. But if you miss on a kid and you sign 25, that's one of 25. You miss on one of three in a class, well, that's everything. That's a third of your class. The difference in basketball to me, John, that I don't say makes it easier for recruiting, but maybe more certain, is the fact that because of the way the summer is set up and the shoe events and the way AAU ball is played, these kids, it's the best on the best in the summer. So you have a good idea at the level of competition you're going to see at the collegiate level, whether they can play or not. You know, a lot of times you'll get a kid in football and he's played, and we've talked about this with quarterbacks before. You know, small classification quarterbacks, you're just uncertain and they generally don't work out, particularly from here in Arkansas. Well, in basketball, there is none of that, because if you're a good player, you're on the Hawks or the Wings or the whatever, elite, something, Woods Elite, one of these traveling basketball teams where the seven or eight best players in your part of the state or in the entire state come together and form a team, and you go to Atlanta, you go to Vegas, you go to the Peach Jam, because they're playing the other best players in the country. So when you're taking a high school kid, you've got a much better way to evaluate and know. You don't have that system in football. So there's a lot more uncertainty for what Chad Morris has to do versus what Eric Musselman's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And now I think the transfer portal pulls even more uncertainty out because there's college tape to watch on these guys.
Yeah. And it's also not to the extent of like in a transfer portal in college basketball, it's not like you have quarterbacks who sat out and didn't get really much chance to play and you don't really have much on them in live game action except lesser teams. And in a lot of cases, if not most cases, when a college basketball player is entering into the transfer portal, he at least has a lot of film on himself and in the college game level that you can evaluate and see what you like as well. But the whole point is that what Eric Musselman gets is that you can have a system, you can have a philosophy, you can have a development, you can have all of these things. But in college basketball, the teams who have the best players, probably more so than any other sport, is what's going to set you aside from just being a good program to a great program, more so than anything. Mm-hmm. And not saying that you got to get nothing but, you know, 7 5 stars and then the rest 4 stars. That'd be great if you could do that. But just getting guys that can compete at the college level,
yep,
and guys that when you're going and have a good balance of everything and a system that can work and that it can be a nice chemistry among everybody, you just need to get those things. And once you do get those things together, then the program takes off from there. And I think that knowing how long that Eric Musselman's been around the game of basketball and the different leagues that he's coached in, I think he gets that more than anything. Now, he's got to execute it. I mean, that's key. Because of Chad Morris, hey, when he was hired and all that, he gets the recruiting angle.
You got to win.
But you got to win, and you got to translate it onto the court.
That's the only execution people care about.
Yeah.
Win. You should go win.
Yeah.
And let's face it, it's become more difficult in recent years. But winning in basketball is just easier than winning in football in the SEC. That's,
for
sure.
As
I said, it's become more difficult. So I mean, what we're asking, when we're just doing a comparison, what you're asking Chad Morris to do versus Eric Musselman's just really not the same thing at all.
Right. And also, when you get to the NCAA tournament where there's 68 teams, all bets are off. Well, you never know what's going to happen.
But that's really the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
You know, we had a call, I guess it's Gary and Arkadelphia on Monday, talking about Dave Van Horn and the basketball program. Conference titles are great, but in those two sports, postseason's all that matters. Regular season matters a little more in football.
Yeah, well, how many times Arkansas basketball has won the SEC? One tournament.
Yeah, one tournament.
Didn't matter.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Me and Tommy and you, of course, are going to have a chance to voice your displeasures and who or what you're beefing with today. Of course, if you want to get in on the conversation, text our Cherokee Casino hotline, 877-377-6963. We'll be sure that your beefs are read on the air. So without further ado, let's jump right into it.
What is wrong with you?
Okay, I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
All right, it is time for What's Your Beef Wednesday. You know, Tom, I'm going to let you go first this time.
All right, there's this argument, or this, I don't know if it's an argument, but this response from people I just simply don't understand. And it only happens after a game like we saw Saturday where Arkansas lost in surprising fashion, embarrassing fashion might be the better word, to a non-Power 5 school. And this comes up not just at Arkansas, but this is an argument or a statement or something that has to be pointed out by people following one of these type of embarrassing losses. And it was going around, and some of it with the national media, but certainly I've had a lot of local folks want to make this point. I'm not sure what the damn point is. Well, Arkansas paid San Jose State $1.5 million to come in here and beat them. Would the loss taste better if they had only paid $750? Or if it was only $1 million? I mean, I just don't understand this, John, that people are so, you paid $1.5 million to get beat? No, you paid $1.5 million to have an opponent to play a home game. And yeah, this is more than usual, and I'm going to argue about the million and a half, but no one paid anybody $1.5 to come in here and beat you.
Yeah, I don't think that was in the contract.
I just don't understand, and people are like angry about this. You paid them $1.5 million and this happened? What does the $1.5 million have to do with anything?
That's like
I don't get it.
That's like number 83 of the things you should be mad
about. Exactly. That's the least of your problems, is that you overpaid for a butt whooping. I get that you're mad about the loss, and this is a byproduct. And then so, well, you know, you paid them $1.5 million. The loss wouldn't taste better at $750 or $500,000. You only paid them $500,000. $1 million. It wouldn't taste any better. So I don't understand this argument. And I get this, it's just multiple times a day. Well, you know, you paid them $1.5 million. I don't care. It wouldn't taste worse at $3 million. I don't understand the logic behind this. Who cares how much you paid them? I care more about getting beat.
What if they had paid you, U of A, $1 million? Would that made it better?
It would still have a bitter, nasty taste in your mouth.
Yeah. I don't understand that, and it happens every time.
But wait, how many texts and social media interactions have we gotten about? Are you aware they paid $1.5 million to get beat? That's not exactly how the contract reads.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because trust me, they did it because they felt like they would win the game.
They did it because they paid someone to come from two time zones away, have to fly their team out here, all of these things, and they did it because they needed a home game to sell tickets. $1.5 million is kind of a drop in the bucket. You don't know the truth of it. I just don't care that it was $1.5 million versus $1 million versus $750 versus $1.2 million. You got beat. And no one cares if they paid them $5 million if you won. So I just don't I don't understand why people are so enraged about that.
No, they're just enraged about any and every detail that they can possibly find. So
this started right after the game with us.
Yeah. But again,
well, you know they paid.
I don't care what they paid.
Yeah,
I care that they lost.
Yeah, that does not matter at all.
And no one would care if they paid $10 million if they won.
That does not matter. But no, that's a good beef. I have three beefs, and that was going to be my third one. But Tommy, I know you probably feel the same way I do. And this is technically sports related. It is. It's a bigger issue than just sports, but it is sports related. So I'll try to keep this as short as I can. But Carson King was a kid that was at College Game Day when they went to the Iowa State game. And you know at College Game Day, Tommy, everyone holds up signs.
Yep.
And he had held up a sign that he had run out of Busch beer. Busch Light. He wanted some. He needed beer money.
Should have called Ty.
So he holds up his sign that has his Venmo username on it, to where people can give you money,
right,
and send you money. He says, "Hey, I'm out of beer. For beer money, send me this."
That's how you millennials pay for everything.
Hey, it's a smart idea and it's a funny idea. I thought it was great. Well,
I mean, I don't understand the Venmo thing, but I know that you guys have been on this. I don't know. That's something.
Yeah. It just makes life easier where people can send you money and no questions asked.
Can I write a check?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't. Kids our age don't even know what checks
can
are.
Can I write
Tommy.
A check?
They don't even know what they are. But anyway,
they know what overdraft fees are, though.
He had held up this sign and people were flooding in money. Like, I mean, a lot. And it was more than he even thought. Well, he decided to come up with the admirable idea of all the money that he was making to donate to the children's hospital that Iowa has, the rival team that he goes up against, that they all wave to in the middle of the game.
Very heart-touching moment in those broadcasts.
All the money that was going towards his beer money with Busch Light, he was donating to charity.
Because this wasn't a small amount of money.
No.
This wasn't like he'd gotten $700.
No. This was thousands and thousands of dollars.
Tens of thousands.
And it kept rolling up and up and up. And then Busch decided to partner with them and say, "Hey, you know, we want to get on board with you. Whatever you make, we'll match it to donate." Like, it was a great thing. I mean, you love to see stories like this. Until just recently, over the past couple of days, the Des Moines Register, which is a paper and a news outlet, a local news outlet.
It'd be similar to the Democrat Gazette in our state, as far as size and reach.
They wanted to do a profile on Carson King and just, you know, talk about the story and everything. Well, they had sent the reporter, one of the people that were covering the story, to go to all of his social media accounts and comb over them from beginning to end, everything that he has ever tweeted or posted, because they said they were doing a routine background check, which, in my opinion, means you're trying to find something that you can get him with and make him look terrible.
That's code for digging up dirt.
Yes, digging up dirt, to which they found 7 years ago, when he was 16 years old, he had tweeted out two jokes from the show Tosh.0 on Comedy Central that were inappropriate. They were from a show. It was not his words. He was quoting a joke. They got this. They went to him like, "We got these tweets." And he was, of course, devastated that he saw that and didn't remember doing it. So he tried to get ahead of the story, came out and had a, "Hey, I'm sorry for these tweets. I'm sorry for all this."
It was 7 years ago.
7 years ago when I was 16 years old. Well, then Busch severed ties with him. They said, "You know what? We were going to still match it, but we're done. We're not going to be associated with you anymore." And it's this whole thing. So
his good deed has been villainized.
Completely and totally villainized. And it infuriates me that we live in a day and age where it's this cancel culture, where everyone just wants to find stuff that they can kill you with. They don't care about the good deeds you're doing. Because this was a great deed that this guy was doing. It was something that I wish all of us could do, and all of us could be a part. And I admire people that do these things. Because you know how easy it would have been, Tommy, for him to keep that money he was getting? I mean, it was his money.
He didn't
have to do anything, but he was donating it to a rival school, or at least the children's hospital from the rival school in Iowa. He was doing an admirable deed, and the fact that they had a routine background check on this guy, which means combing through every tweet to try to get him, it's pathetic, it's disgusting, and I hate that we live in a time where as a 16-year-old kid, you have your reputation, or at least attempted to have it tarnished because of something you did, a dumb thing that you did when you were 16 years old. Give me a break. And the people are absolutely wrecking the Des Moines Register. And they have come out and made a statement since saying, "We stand by what we reported. His tweets were offensive. You should basically be mad at him."
Just because it's the truth that he retweeted something that weren't even his own words, as you're laying out here, doesn't mean you can't take the sum of everything, everyone's deeds and actions, and determine what kind of person this is.
Yes.
Are you without flaw? Because I'm not.
I know
I don't think
I'm
any
not.
Of us are without flaws. All of us have something that we probably have done in our past and we're not very proud of. And thank goodness it isn't out there in some archive on social media for waiting on some reporter to dig up after you do something that's supposed to be uplifting to other people.
Yep.
So this goes on, man. It's just the political climate we live in, the social climate we live in. We're in a I got you world, man. I mean, everybody's looking to bring down somebody that gains any kind of notoriety, even if it's brief. You know, it's just the world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Sad because, as you said, this guy's trying to do a great deed to help others, selflessly help others.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that what he tweeted 7 years ago, you know, he didn't do it, but does that matter? I mean, does that matter with what's going on, what the story is to be reported today?
No, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't excuse it. I didn't, you know, but
he was 16 years old, exactly. Man. This was 7 years ago. And it's like, you add that into the mix, and then the fact that, you know, you say it's a routine background check to go through every single tweet. What does that matter with the guy that's trying to raise money for a children's hospital by going to his tweets when he was 16 years old, unless you're just trying to find a story like this because it gets you clicks? And it sucks, man. It just sucks that we live in this age. And I am fearful because, listen, Tommy, I know that, you know, I'm a little younger than you, and I know that you didn't grow up in the social media age like I did. But listen, Tommy, I've had Twitter, I think, since 2011, I think is when I first started it. I have no idea what I tweeted in 2011 or 2012. I don't think I did anything
offensive.
It makes
you want to delete your account.
Yes. Because,
start over.
Because and even the thing is that whatever I tweeted back then may not have been offensive at the time, but then that's somebody could come dig it up.
That's right. Because social standards, is that the right way? We're just more easily offended today than we were 5 years ago,
easily.
10 years ago. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Easily. And I guess the
more movements out there. And listen, if you're not offended, there's someone that is willing to be offended for you.
That's right. I mean, that's right. And by the way, the journalist that was going through the tweets and all that, Twitter and their enragement went after him on his Twitter and found that he had some offensive tweets as well. And apparently the Des Moines Register is investigating it. So
good.
That was my beef. Again, I know.
If you're going to hold this guy that's trying to do wonderful things to this standard.
Yep.
Why can't the reporter be held to the same standard?
That's right. So again, I know it was bigger than sports, but still sports related. But man,
it all started at College Game Day.
Yeah.
So how many kids this week? Where is College Game Day this week? I mean, it's not in Arlington. I know
that.
Yeah,
Ty, where is
Nebraska?
Nebraska.
Ohio State, Nebraska.
How many Venmo accounts are we going to see in the background now?
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah.
They figured out the new scam. How do I get money? And it's not from mom and dad. And I don't have to work for it.
Just get it from strangers that are sending it to you. I listen, because if you think about
it. It's just a shame we didn't think of this.
Well, what's the problem in putting it up anyways? Because it's not like you're going to lose money by putting up the sign. If anything, even if you gain $5, $5.
You're out a little time and effort.
Man, I mean, that's pretty incredible, too. That's pretty incredible. But we have a lot of people that are going to be texting and calling in your beefs. Be sure to keep those coming on the Cherokee Casino Hotline. 877-377-6963.
What's Your Beef Wednesday? Brought to you by Arvest Bank. Have you checked your mortgage rate lately? If you financed your home 5 or 10 years ago and you put it on a 30, or maybe you did a 15 not very long ago, have you checked rates lately? Because they're in the 3% range and have dropped dramatically. So if your mortgage rate is 4, 4.25, 4.5, you need to call Arvest Bank and let them run the numbers for you. Call Randy at 479-573-1127. I did this recently, and I had a couple options. I could lower my payment a couple $100 a month and stay on the same schedule, or I could take my 30 and convert it to a 15 and cut over 25% off the term of my loan. You may be able to do some of both, lower your payment and cut years off. Let Randy and his team go to work and find out what they can do to lower the interest rate on your mortgage right now with Arvest Bank. That's Randy at 479-573-1127, or download the Home For Me app to your mobile device and search for a loan officer with Arvest Bank near you. Arvest Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
I have a few of you that are texting and tweeting in things that you're beefing with today. Looks like this is Tucker saying people tweeting at players and their families. and the players that are chirping at the fan base on social media. Shouldn't this be a rule of thumb? You know, speaking of social media, don't tweet at players. Don't tweet at, especially not at their families. What is that?
Well, a lot of this is in the afterwash of an emotional game, loss. Something's happened. Yeah, I mean,
don't do that.
It just it makes you look like you're attacking a kid.
Yeah.
Because at the end of it, I know they may be 20 or 21 or whatever. They're still kids.
Yeah. They're still kids. If you, hey, listen.
And if you don't think they are, then you don't have kids that old.
Listen.
Take it from someone that does. They're still kids.
I'm not saying attack anybody on social media. But if you're going to tweet somebody, like tweet Chad Morris. He can take it. He can take that stuff. If you have a complaint, tweet at him. Don't go to the players. Don't go to their family members. Like, what is that?
Well, what was it Mike Gundy once said? I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yeah. So, he can take it. He's not a kid.
Come after me.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the kids. Come after me.
Exactly. So it's the same thing. Again, not saying anyone should be attacked on Twitter, because I don't want to be attacked on Twitter, but saying if you're going to do that, don't do it to the players or their families. Mike tweets in. he's beefing with Bo Mattingly.
What?
He's still around,
what
I guess.
What did Bo do to make you mad?
For interviewing Houston Nutt and getting that pot brewing again. Not everybody. Now everybody wants that clown back. You know, it is funny, Mike, that when anytime you see Nutt, and you know, I know that the Hog Pod, I guess, is interviewing Houston Nutt, there are a lot of people that are like, take me back, take me back. I'm like, it's amazing what people will do when you're really down. You'll do whatever it takes to get back to even just having mediocrity.
Not that was Camelot, but everyone always wants to rebuild Camelot. Let's go back to the good times. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, Houston Nutt was not the good times for me. That was not good. I was never a fan of Nutt.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Arkansas and Texas A&M this Saturday at 11 a.m. in Arlington at Jerry World. It's always such a strange game. The Aggies have definitely had the number of the Razorbacks over the past seven seasons. We're going to talk a little more about this matchup and about Texas A&M as we welcome in Mark Passwaters, who covers Texas A&M for AggieYell.com. Mark, appreciate you joining us. How you doing this morning, man?
Doing fine, John. How about you?
I'm doing well. We're doing well. And you know, I want to get your thoughts on this, because I always find it interesting, especially at this point in time in the season, whenever we have somebody on who covers the other school, just kind of get the pulse of what the fans are feeling, what the current program's at, because Texas A&M's at 2-2. Their two losses were against two quality teams in Clemson and in Auburn. But what's the overall feel right now in Aggieland for how the fans feel about the season and the direction of where the season's going?
I think the fans are frustrated, and then I think the coaching staff is frustrated. They basically laid two eggs against Clemson and Auburn. And that may sound ridiculous when you think, well, it's number one and number eight. They played bad in both games. I mean, when I was listening to your intro and heard Chad Morris talking about the San Jose State game, I thought to myself, well, if you speed that up about three times, that could have been Jimbo talking about last weekend. I mean, A&M was just really disappointing. I mean, there's just no better way to put it. It's a good football team, and they have played some really bad football. Offensive line has not been good. The running game, especially since Jay Sean Corbin got hurt, hasn't been good. You know, the defense, you look at the numbers, and they look pretty darn good, but, you know, they look like they had never schemed for Auburn in their life. And it was pretty obvious what they were going to do. Everybody knew it. Gus didn't do anything different. So there's a lot of frustration and, you know, an element of disappointment, because you needed that game last weekend, especially if you take a look at what's still left on the schedule, Georgia, Alabama, and LSU. Yeah.
Looking at, you know, every game seems to start and end with how it goes in the trenches. Looking at the A&M offensive line, three returning starters, both your tackles and your center back from a year ago, three juniors, a senior, and a freshman up front. Looks like A&M's, you know, set up once again I know they're frustrated at this point, but to make a run in the SEC with that offensive line.
Well, you know, you say the center is back. The guy who's playing center is a veteran, but Eric McCoy was the center last year, and he's now snapping the ball to Drew Brees. And that loss is a very, you know, tangible one. He was not only a big physical guy, but he was a 3-year starter, and he was very, very good. Not just in the physical game, but the mental as well. His line checks were excellent. He just knew what to do. Colton Prater isn't there yet. And I've been very disappointed overall with just the general physicality that they've shown. And when you think about what Jimbo emphasizes, that's one of the things. So you take a look at what's happened from last year to this. Last year, they started off being disappointing on the offensive line, but their problem was primarily pass blocking. This year, pass blocking has improved, but run blocking is significantly worse under Josh Henson. So, you know, it took a couple of months for them to gel last year. It may be the case again this year, but at this point, you know, first of all, we got to see some evidence of it, and second, it may be a little too late to really salvage the expectations for 2019.
Mark, there's a lot of connections between Arkansas and Texas A&M, particularly with players and staff. We all know Chad Moore's connection, John Chavis, the defense coordinator for Arkansas, used to be the D.C. over with the Aggies. But I want to start with the main one, or at least the ones that people are most fascinated by, and that's the quarterback Nick Starkel, who had started his career at Texas A&M, now plays for Arkansas. He had a really nice game against Colorado State, but had absolutely an abysmal game against San Jose State where he threw five interceptions. You've covered A&M for quite some time. What are your thoughts on Nick Starkel when he was at A&M, and what type of quarterback do you think he can be in the Chad Moore system at Arkansas?
Well, I'll be perfectly honest. I thought he was going to win the starting job last year. You know, he had had the better of things in 2017 under Kevin Sumlin, and I really thought that he was going to be better prepared. Kellen Mond came out and surprised everybody, and I think he's, you know, for all the complaints about him, he's justified when, you know, Jimbo's decision. Nick is an interesting guy because he's got a huge arm. He can make some great throws, but then as you saw last weekend, he can make just some terrible mistakes. And they can be extremely costly. You take a look at last year, the Clemson game. A&M should have won that football game. Nick came in for one play, got hit, made a mistake of having the ball out where he shouldn't have, fumbled, Clemson recovered. A&M was inside the Clemson 20 when that happened. And, you know, essentially, you can argue that with a bunch of other things, it cost him the ball game. You know, with Nick, it's just, it's hit or miss. And I think that people saw that the last 2 weeks up in Fayetteville, where you saw him just absolutely eat Colorado State alive, and then he turns around and throws five picks against San Jose State.
Yeah. A&M has won seven straight in this series, all of them since joining the SEC. What's the view from the fan base, from the coaching staff? How do they view this game on the schedule every year with Arkansas? It's played in Arlington. It's a weird deal because neither team gets to play this at home. What's the viewpoint or the feeling about the Arkansas A&M series there in College Station?
Well, I think unless you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex, you absolutely hate the fact that it's a Jerry World. I can't stand it. You know, we've been there now 7 years in a row. I've gotten lost getting out of there 7 years in a row. It's just it's ridiculously big. But, you know, for fans, the atmosphere is lacking. People want from A&M want to go to Arkansas for a home-and-home. They want to have games at Kyle Field. They want to go to Fayetteville. You know, obviously, they're contractually obligated to 2024, but if they could find a way out of it, I think they'd be very happy to do so. You know, as for the game itself, you know, obviously, you have the historical rivalry between the two programs going back to the Southwest Conference. For this year, for A&M, you better win this game because you got to get back on track because you take a look at what's coming. You got a bye week because then you got Alabama. You know, things are not going to be easy at any point this year. This is a game they absolutely must have.
Speaking with Mark Passwaters of AggieYell.com via the Cherokee Casino Hotline right now on the Morning Rush. You know, I want to ask you about Chad Morris because obviously with the way that last season went going 2-10, which historically was the worst Razorback football season of all time, this year they're starting out 2-2. They will have a loss to Ole Miss and, of course, the absolutely embarrassing and humiliating loss to San Jose State. There is a lot of Razorback fans that are not happy with Chad Morris. They want to see a change. They don't think that he's the right guy, the right fit for the job. What do you make about Chad Morris? Just from an outsider's perspective, what do you make of him as a coach? Do you think that he needs more time and he can get Arkansas going? What are your thoughts on Chad?
Well, I think that just as a general point, a coach deserves a full recruiting cycle. You know, at least 3 years where it's with his players. And you take a look at what Chad Morris is trying to do. He's trying to completely change offensive systems with players that were recruited by Brett Bielema. You know, you're talking about going 180 degrees here, and I'm not overly surprised that there's been some difficulty. And you take a look at the situation that the Razorbacks are faced with right now. A&M has Jimbo Fisher, and they're recruiting extremely well. Tom Herman in Texas are recruiting extremely well. Obviously, Oklahoma are is recruiting extremely well. Why am I bringing up these three things? Because historically, Arkansas has had success recruiting in Texas when they've been good. Right now, it's very difficult to do that. So he's got the double whammy of trying to place a square peg in a round hole, and he's trying to recruit against programs that at this point in time are in a better position than he is. So I think it's real tough to sit there and slam him after 15 games. I don't think that's really fair. I think he deserves a longer evaluation than that, but I think he's got a tough road to hoe.
Yeah. Got to ask you about Nick Starkel. He played in 11 games for the Aggies, transferred, of course, to Arkansas. Everybody knows he's the starting quarterback here. Had a rough outing last week, 5 interceptions. From your perspective, I mean, I know he just played in 11 games there, but he's only played a couple at Arkansas. What do Hog fans need to know about Nick Starkel at this point?
He's a great kid. I mean, he's a very, very good human being. You'll never hear anybody say anything negative about him. I think the biggest problem that Nick has at this point is the fact that he's behind a bad offensive line and he's not mobile. You know, he's got a huge arm. He can make big plays, but like I said earlier, it's hit or miss. He can make big mistakes. The biggest problem that Nick has is he just doesn't have that ability to keep plays alive with his feet. He's very stationary. And that is a bit of a problem in Chad Morris's offense. I totally get why he's the starter. I think he should be the starter. But you're going to have to deal with some ebbs and some flows. And, you know, he just needs people to block better in front of him. Honestly, it sounds a lot like what Kellen Mond has to deal with right now.
All right, Mark, before I let you get out of here, though, I want to look at this game in particular. Both teams are 2-2, but Texas A&M is favored at this point in time by 23.5 points. Obviously, the better team, more talented team, but we all know that this game can get weird at times, especially over the past few years. What do you see happening in this matchup? Do you think A&M runs away with this like Vegas does? What are your thoughts on the game itself?
Well, I think that really depends on what A&M team shows up. Are we talking about the team that played the fourth quarter against Auburn? Are we talking about the team that, you know, obviously crushed lesser competition? Or are we talking about the team that played the first half against Auburn and much of the game against Clemson? If they sit there and they're just mistake prone and they don't play with a sense of urgency, then it's a ball game. But if they come out and they show some anger and take out some frustration after last week, you know, that A&M's defensive front is very, very good. You know, just to put it on brass tacks. And Arkansas's offensive line has proven that it's not very good. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on Nick. And as we saw last week, when there's pressure, he can make mistakes. And if Arkansas turns the ball over anywhere like they did last weekend, especially if you give the Aggies a short field, they're going to put up a lot of points. And they're going to try to do some things differently this week. I think they're going to try to establish the running game, obviously. But I think Kellen Mond's going to have to run more. And if he's able to find some space, as we saw a couple of years ago when he had that huge run, he can do some damage. And I think that the opportunity is there for A&M to win this thing big, but they better show up. They didn't show up last year, and it nearly cost them.
Mark Passwaters covers Texas A&M for AggieYell.com. Really appreciate you hopping on with us this morning, Mark. Have a great weekend, man. Enjoy the game, and I'm sure we'll be catching up later down the road.
All right, thanks, gentlemen.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at HitThatLine.com.